Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Soul Sisters podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Katz, joined by my co-host, Dara Golub. Dara and I have an awesome artist on the show today. Her name is Dessa. She comes to us by way of Minneapolis, where she is part of the Doomtree Records hip hop collective, which she helped to co-found over 10 years ago. And now she helps run and helps nurture other artists. And she's a kick-ass boss lady in her own right. You might know Dessa. She also performed on the Hamilton mixtape album. She sang the song Congratulations, and she tells us about how she hooked up with Lin-Manuel Miranda to do that. She's a writer. She's a businesswoman. She's someone who just always has way too much going on, but somehow pulls it all off wonderfully. All of her projects are fascinating and unique and beautiful, and we are super excited to talk to her about them. So we'll get to that in just one second. Just a reminder, if you are not already, please subscribe to Soul Sisters on iTunes. And you can also watch all of our episodes now filmed on Billboard's YouTube channel. Okay, without further ado, here is Dessa, who, by the way, has an awesome new album out. Came out in February called Chime, which she's touring on. So go look for it if you want to see her perform. Yeah, Dessa on Soul Sisters. Here you go. Well, first, hi, Dessa.
Hey.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, as I was saying before, when Dara said I wasn't allowed to speak yet, how much mileage did you get out of being on the Hamilton mixtape? How big was that for you?
It was a big deal.
I feel like I sound like an asshole by opening this conversation asking you about that, because you've done so many other things.
Right. You meant to ask it as an aside before we started, and
yes,
I stopped you. Okay.
But
right.
Because it's odd, because it's mentioned on the sticker that's on your album.
Of your new album.
So this was not totally unprompted. Okay. But now you have to answer.
Okay. I think here in New York, particularly, like where Broadway lives, like it resonates quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then maybe like a little tiny bit less in Missoula.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Although, that's funny. That album was so big, though.
Hamilton, I mean, it's like impossible to overstate, at least in my experience.
But the reach of people who haven't even seen the show.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, because the cast recording and the mixtape was so good, you know, so it's like from Sydney, you know, to London to Prague. I mean, there's no overestimating.
To New Yorkers who can't afford to go see that.
Hey. Right, exactly. I can't believe neither of us have seen it. Have you seen it?
I can't believe you haven't seen it.
You have. Oh, ready for the insufferable boast.
Yeah.
Three times.
What?
Fuck yeah.
Because of being on the mixtape?
Yeah, of course.
But how did you get on the mixtape?
Let's see. I had first seen a note, or no, I think I had initially received a text from a friend. It was like, yeah, Lin mentioned one of your songs on a very long list of songs that he was listening to.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, around the time of writing Hamilton. So enormously flattered.
Which song?
It was a song called Dixon's Girl.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I hit him up on Twitter.
That's the place to find him.
The place to find love.
He spends a lot of time on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Oh, was that about me and you?
Yeah, a little bit.
That's how we met. Was on Twitter.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. Best friendship.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
Okay. It's cute.
Wow, that's crazy. So you tweeted at him.
Uh huh.
Was he following you? Is it a DM or just a straight at?
That's a good question. I think I'd have to review my like Twitter history in the Wayback Machine or whatever.
For a DM.
You do, but yeah. I can't remember if I first had to say like, hey, hey. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. In my brontosaurus voice.
I heard you like me.
That's just horrible. Let's move. No, he was really kind. He was and really generous, and he's, I think, in almost everything he does, man, he's been super eager to, you know, receive some of the intention and the accolades that he does, and then find cool ways to distribute to the art that he likes, whether that means making a, you know, a playlist on Spotify and sharing that regularly. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, you can hear it in every interview he does. I mean, he mentions his collaborators and the artists that he's working with. So he lived really up supportive. To that hype.
Yeah.
He is. He lived up to that hype in my interactions with
him. It's cool. I didn't know about the mixtape. And I just love that, of course, this Broadway musical that's a hip hop musical then lends itself to having this like hip hop format for like another whole selection of music. Like it's just really cool.
Yeah. Super rad. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like people who are really into Hamilton want to hear the story all the way through. So then what was recording that song like? Okay, I just want to finish it for the people who crave it.
Of course. Yeah. Okay. So we initially connected on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And I got to see the show. And I had been prepared to enjoy it, but I hadn't prepared the right way.
Mm-hmm. Meaning?
Because I'd been prepared to see this, like, masterful triple threat, you know, performance where these people can sing and act and dance in corsets. And I was excited about that. And I was also excited to see how this really, like, there's a really serious expository burden, right? Like, you have to get across a lot of information.
Yeah. Yeah. Whose song is Congratulations?
It's not in the actual.
Oh, it's not?
Mm-mm.
On the show?
No.
Oh.
But it's, it was sung as a demo by Renee. But anyway, so I was like, I went to the show and I was braced for all that stuff. Like, wow, how is it going to work? Yeah. You know, all of this history into these lyrics. And I'm excited to see these A-listers perform and blow my mind. And I had not been ready for like a really tragic love story. And so I ended up just like losing.
Wow.
My shit, you know. I'm just just crying during the second act because I hadn't known to brace for it. It was so beautiful, and so
right. There's
moving.
That even on top of like all
I mean.
The spectacular, like
musical
and like other performance wise.
But I hadn't cross trained for that,
right.
I wasn't ready. I wasn't braced for that, man. And so it really, really affected me. And I was like, wow, jeez, what a masterwork to be able to do all of this.
Yeah.
Like everyone else. Surprise, I liked Hamilton.
I feel very validated by that because I was out to dinner last night with a friend who's a lawyer, and she was telling me about seeing Hamilton and that she had mixed feelings about it because she wasn't sure that it was presenting federalism in the right way and that she was worried people were going to misunderstand Hamilton and exactly what he did. And I was like, I don't really think that's what that musical's about. I haven't seen it, but I've listened to the soundtrack, but I think it's about much bigger things than that. And she was like, really? And I was like,
she
you
said,
saw
really?
The show?
She said, really?
What did you get? Yeah. I was like, come on, like, helpless and satisfied? Like, those are about everything. Those
focusing
are like
on a little
the twin experiences
stuff,
of love. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also impressed by your caliber of friend, though. Like, what a statement. Like, I'm concerned about the misrepresentation of federalism. I can hang out with a lot of friends for a long time before that's a comment I come up with.
Well, I can add nothing to that conversation. Yeah, okay. We have to change subjects very quickly.
Immediately.
Yeah. Okay.
Would you ever want to be in
Hamilton? The honest appraisal is I don't think my skill set is like well matched for that.
Why? Okay, but if you were, would you
be? But
Angelica,
but I would also
Eliza,
wanna...
or Peggy? No, everyone go around and just kidding.
I wish I knew the show well enough. I would want to. Disagree, not being you.
What if
but
we,
being
what
a
if
fan
we fight?
That you think we, that she should be.
Yeah,
in
no, but
that
I think your skill set is you know well matched.
I mean, so the reason in part is like I you know having spent all of my career to this point primarily presenting my own material, in a way that allows me like the skills I've developed are room reading, meaning like I know when a room of people is getting bored or needs
I feel like this is proving Dara's point.
But you're not allowed to change course. in a Broadway play. Okay. So you're not allowed to. That's one of my best skills is like, I know I can see how many people are texting. I know when the chatter at the bar gets louder. I can tell how many times the till has gone off. I know when the boys and the girls are noticing one another.
What do you do in those circumstances? How do you course correct?
So maybe it depends if I'm playing with a live band. I do a little signal behind my back that says, can you increase the tempo of this song? Or I'll put my left arm, I'll extend my left arm, and I'll look to my right so that it feels like to the people who are watching, there's energy being beamed both ways. I'm attending to you. I see you. Or sometimes I'll say with my left hand, I'll kind of do a motion that implies I'd like the crowd to back up. And then I'll just jump the barricade and jump into the crowd. Say, hey, let's get into this. We're here. Let's be alive right now together. That's not going to help.
Such a huge part of this for you is the actual interaction with the audience. You're not saying to yourself, I'm going to go out, give it what I got. They're going to give me what they've got, but I can't control that and I can't worry about that. You worry about that.
All I do is worry.
Wow. So much so that you'd say, I wouldn't want to take my rapping and my singing and those skills to Hamilton because I couldn't. If they got bored with me, I would be stuck.
But I'll say, I mean, not that it's always a zero sum game, but like, I'm really good at that first thing I said. And I'm, you know, and I'll boast about it. And I'm a good writer and stuff. But I don't have a Broadway, at this point, I don't have a Broadway singer's pitch. I mean, I just don't. Those guys, because they're so accustomed to working in big vocal ensembles where everybody's got to be, you know, absolutely razor sharp. And I think I'm a good performer, but it's sort of different.
I understand that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's different. What's your ideal room to perform in? Like, kind of room?
That's a good question. I do like for me, having kind of cut my teeth with rap guys, I can't like jump and sing, you know, like I can get really, really athletic. So I do depend on lights to help me convey emotion, you know, whereas like some of the dudes in Doomtree can just like, you know, like pogo essentially. They're gonna hate me, we don't pogo, dude, but can jump and move and like a somersault and headbang and everything. And I, while singing, don't do that, so I rely more on like when to lift an eyebrow and when to curl the fingers slowly into a fist, you know, and when to lean forward slowly and then jump and that kind of stuff. So I rely on light a lot. So good light. I do like a stage height that allows for line of sight. So if people want to stand up, they can still see, you know, which you can't get in like a foot high stage or something.
Yeah.
And I would say that it's probably not good for the bottom line, but it's good for the feeling to be in a room where that's small enough.
Right.
That if I decide to put down the mic for a second, I can yell and be heard.
Yeah.
Which you can't do in a room of 5,000, but you can do in a room of 800.
Yeah. So let's talk about Doomtree. Start with that a little bit.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. This is a collective, you and six dudes.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And my understanding is that the way that you've put it is Doomtree is about friendship first, music second, money third.
Mm-hmm.
No contracts.
Right.
Just friends agreeing to do this together because you love it.
Right.
And you've been doing it for 10 plus years or so. And it's been sustainable. Sustaining. You've played 8,000, you know, cap rooms and stuff like that. How does that function, first of all, in an industry? Because you're well known. You know, you're doing it. But that just sounds like the exact opposite of something that would function, you know, well. And then I want to talk about the idea of you being in a collective with six dudes. That's separate.
Right.
How does this function?
I mean, I was type A enough that when I first joined, I was like, let's be clear, this is not functional. This will never, you know what I mean? We have to have contracts.
Yeah.
And I got these books from the library and I made a Venn diagram in PowerPoint. I mean, I went in.
I love a Venn diagram.
I do too.
It's very satisfying.
I know. And I had like these complicated, you know, simple algebraic equations, but relatively complicated for a rap meeting about like how I thought the compensation models would work and the appropriate terms of commitment. But at the end of the day, like if you don't want to be here, we should let you go and you should leave and you should find a place that you do want to be because you're an artist and I like you.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And to be clear, there are definitely, on occasion, like, raised voices and tears. It's not like kumbaya. Do you know what I mean? We're not like, yeah, it's not like we all bring our pennies at the end of, you know, every day and we just put them on the table and then, you know what I mean? And then we all share from one loaf of bread.
Right.
I mean,
it's not a hippie commune.
It's not hippie. It's not. It's a, you know, rap is aggressive
rap.
And competitive.
Yep. Yeah.
But that said, and we've definitely got spreadsheets. Like, you know, I'm very aware of, you know, when we first sat down, I was like, can I see that record really quick? Because I want to see how the sticker ended up being printed after we set the... We've got profit and loss spreadsheets for every project we do.
Uh-huh. But how much is that you bringing that to the table?
I think at the very beginning, it was, you know, I was business minded. But now the guy who runs the label is called Laserbeak. And he's the dude. I mean, when I want to spend money, it's, hey, Beak. it's Dessa.
Yeah.
About those stickers.
Yeah. Right.
Can I get that gold foil, please? You know what I mean?
Right. Was that hard to relinquish some control to someone else?
I will say yes. And then I will also say that even the harder thing was to just realize like how good he is.
Yeah.
Like he surpassed me. You know, and yeah. I had, you know, you kind of like I had tucked it into my self concept that I'm the like I'm leadery.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, he's got all these leadership skills that I don't have. Mm. I feel like I'm really good at leading and at following teams of people who are similar to me,
mm-hmm.
who keep the same hours and who have the same, you know, like work style and stuff. And he's really good at like finding a way to make really varied people work. He's a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
So then how is it to be in a rap group with six guys? Mm-hmm. You've talked about the idea of having to sort of be aware of how you're perceived and that maybe starting out in the group, you were less eager to sing as part of the group because then you'd be perceived as the singer chick, mm-hmm. and not so much the hard, you know, rapper. And that is something that carries on. That's something that every musician, every female musician deals with. Every, I think, woman deals with wherever their, you know, setting is, having to kind of put on a hat of like, I'm one of you.
Mm.
How has that evolved within the group? And do you feel that's, you know, not so much of an issue now?
I mean, yeah, it's a good question. Also, can we just do a quick, you're really well researched. I want to fist bump you, but you're just keeping your hands
thanks.
Away. Okay. I was lucky enough to, I think, always receive a really genuine and legit welcome from within the crew. And more than a welcome, it was like, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. None of us did. We were young, but I didn't know. I didn't know what a bar was. Uh-huh. I didn't know what a measure of music mm-hmm. was. I didn't know. And then when one of the dudes was like, well, how many snares are in a measure? I was like, I can't identify the snare. I can
all right,
just rap.
Let's just take it back for 2 seconds. How'd you get into music and rap then?
I wanted to be a writer and I couldn't get published. So then a friend of mine was like, you should go try performing your essays as like a poetry slam. One of those competitive, you know, it's like you go to a bar, you do a performance of a piece.
Right.
At the end of the night, the crowd votes and whoever wins gets like $50. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that kind of vibe. And it was there that I met the dudes who would eventually kind of invite me to be a part of the Minneapolis hip hop community.
But you weren't writing music?
No.
Okay.
No, I was writing like personal nonfiction narrative essays.
Okay. But as spoken word, it occurred to them that that would work well in music.
So I just tried to memorize one of the essays.
Okay.
And performed it.
Yeah.
You know, just, okay, if I can remember. And kind of acted it.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, bars. You got bars? And you're like, bars?
Hot bars?
Drinks?
Yeah, totally. But I mean, I could, you know, it's like even when I was rapping, though, I was recording rap music.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know the terminology. I just knew how to do it, you know?
And you had the sort of, for lack of a better word, like swag or like the feel of it?
I mean, yeah. I think I'm both. Like, I think some of the music that I make is, you know, is not swag based, and then some is.
Yeah.
You know, I like choral music. I like a great rap pattern. Mm-hmm. And so kind of maneuvering through those worlds. I mean, I'm usually like the nerdiest rapper backstage and I'm the toughest person at the conference room. You know what I mean? But yeah, so in meeting Doomtree, I mean, it wasn't just like, hey, I guess you can be in our boys club. It was like, hey, this is rad. Like, you should listen to this. You should try this. Here's a beat. What do you think of this one? You want to try to rap on this one? We were growing together. It was from the outside, right? Those were the perceptions that I was managing. It wasn't like, what will the Doomtree guys think of me? Mm-hmm. It was like, what does the rest of the world make of this?
Mm-hmm.
Set, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I used to wear like size 16 raver pants and I had a pair of white boxer shorts that I would that I would wear, and then I would fold the top over the raver pants so you knew what was boxers.
Wow.
You know, and then like a huge like extra large sweatshirt, because I just didn't want any, I didn't want to give anybody a reason to dismiss me.
Yep. Yeah.
But then as soon as I remember wearing a form-fitting sweater, and I got a lot of heat, a lot of feedback on that, and at a now defunct website, like somebody wrote like, oh, I wonder why she got that job, and then posted like six pictures of like moments where you could see skin anywhere, and were like, this is 2000. They did like a
retrospect, like yeah
exactly. And even reporters, you know, I remember speaking with a very well respected publication, a national publication, like, you know, how do you respond to allegations that you have this job only, you know, because you're a woman or because you dated someone in the crew, which I had.
That's just so hard.
And I think in the beginning, I spent a lot of time worried about what I didn't want people to think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But now, this far in the game, it's like, what's the raddest thing that you could do, knowing that, A, it is easier now that I've sort of made a name for myself and some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm less worried about people saying, she can't rap. You know, she's just dating someone. Well, I put out, go listen to the records. And if you don't like them, I hope you find someone else you do like.
Right.
But obviously, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now I worry a little bit less about, like, forestalling other people's opinions and just try to do good work.
Yeah. Can I ask?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ask why you are the only woman with six dudes.
That's interesting. There's a lot of interviews I've never been asked that. I mean, there aren't that many women in rap music. I'm wondering right now, I think probably 1 out of 7 is an overrepresentation of women in rap music.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just by numbers.
Also, is it, well, I just wonder if that's a ratio you guys would like to change.
Oh, sure. You know what? We're at this point, it's fam.
You're a group, yeah.
I mean, it's 10. No one.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I would be very surprised if anyone was ever signed to Doomtree. We're just family we are.
Yeah. It's also a Minnesota-based group, right?
It is,
I guess now explaining how you came into music and into rap, it makes sense that you wouldn't say, well, now I need to go to New York or LA and try to explore this, because it really was a family connection that became like the beginning of your career. So you wouldn't take it elsewhere.
Oh,
you
I
never,
see what you're
you know,
saying.
I was wondering about your connection to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pride and a lot of like deep roots that you have there. Tons of music. You do other music groups. You founded The Boy Sopranos, which is an a cappella group. You're in Vocal Essence, right?
I wrote for them.
Okay. Yeah, so you do a lot with like a lot of different kinds of music, but all Minnesota based, it seems. And so it makes sense that that's why, that you don't feel like, how do I take my career somewhere else? Because your career is
there
this group.
You know, I'll be honest. I mean, initially when we first started, we did the thing that we saw on TV. Like we made demos and then we sent them to places. Usually those places had addresses on the coast. And then we checked the mailbox every day to see if we won. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you were.
Oh, like, yeah. Like, what do you do if you're an artist? I don't know. You're supposed to record a really good song and then you mail it to someone in a suit. Right. And then that person says, you know, come and be famous. Like, we had very,
you had normal ambitions as musicians. You didn't say, oh, the obvious thing will be let's create our own label and just do it ourselves.
No, absolutely not. It was just like the path of most resistance seemed to be the one that we knew about as the standard narrative. Yeah. But I think like a lot of musicians at that time, we were realizing, okay, well, like I used to be a teacher at a music school and I was like, you know, until you get signed, let's say you are going to get signed by Sony, you know, whatever. You're indie now, so build your career so that by the time you sit down at a negotiating table, you've got some leveraging power. And I think like a lot of musicians, by the time we actually were attracting the attention of, you know, potential partners, we'd kind of built a lot of the infrastructure that we would have been partnering with people for. Right. It was of necessity that we said, okay, we can't burn our own CDs at our mom's house because we're moving some CDs now. So we should find a company. Could somebody Google a company that makes CDs? You know, and then, you know, we used to rely on friends who worked at Kinko's or whatever to copy flyers. We should find a printer because he's going to get fired, you know. So, yeah, after a few years of just meeting the need,
right,
we accidentally and then deliberately had built like an independent, internationally distributed record label.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Before you came in, we were talking amongst ourselves about how we identify ourselves when we meet somebody out in the world as artists, as people who do various kinds of film producing and shooting and directing and writing, and just how that can be kind of awkward. And as like your own concept of self evolves, how you start explaining that to people. So I'm curious to know, like, back in the early days, how you would have introduced yourself to somebody and how the hell you would do it now.
Right. And now I'm looking at your new CD and on this sticker that we were discussing, the new album from singer, rapper and essayist. And I would add, you know, poet, record executive. You know, there are so many things that can be described that can be used to describe you. So, yeah.
But which words bubble to the top for you?
I mean, this I can't tell if this sounds like careering or not, but it honestly just depends on who I'm talking to,
no,
and how much I want to talk to them more. Like,
right.
If it's a Thanksgiving dinner, do you know what I mean? I'm like, making music, can I have some potatoes? And if I'm at a conference, you know, a literary conference, then I'm going to talk about an upcoming book. And if I'm hanging out backstage, you know, then I'm going to mention that I've got a record coming out. Because it can also feel sort of like insufferably self-aggrandizing to be like, oh, to know what I do, you're gonna really have to sit through a hyphenated list, because I do a lot of stuff. I mean, that's just like, oh, please.
Yeah. But do you feel like a true hyphenate?
Is it true? I don't even know.
You know what I mean? Like,
usually if it feels like I'm talking to someone who actually does want an answer,
right,
and is willing to like sit for a second,
yeah,
I'll say like, I work in the language arts, so I do music and I do writing and I do some performance. I like words and I work with those.
I love that. You mentioned the research that I did, and I will say I did go down a little bit of a hole.
Is this
a rabbit
what you tweeted
hole.
Yesterday? I would like to pull up your tweet.
It was inspired by you. It was inspired by my research. By
what
you,
did it
my
say?
Tweet. It was like it was like I enjoy doing my soul sister's homework. The women we get to meet are so inspiring, and they make me want to be better. And I was researching.
So now
you.
I know why she tweeted that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Man, arrow to the sternum.
It really, and thanks. I'll say, because I went in a direction that you might not expect, or even imagine would be possible. I watched two videos that sort of led me to a lot of places. One was your commencement speech for University of Minnesota, your alma mater, and one was a medical talk where you're sort of comparing, contrasting being a musician with being like a medical professional. And I was just kind of blown away by the spectrum of your work and your brain and your thinking and like how you synthesize your different interests and like, you know, the way that you work and think. So I have a few things.
I have a few things
from the commencement speech that I want to sort of throw back in your face.
Oh, cool.
And see if you can, if how you feel about the advice that you gave to these graduating students. So you actually, I love this. You left Doomtree's first European tour to go speak at University of Minnesota, which I think is amazing. Mm-hmm. You went there for philosophy, which is also amazing. Okay. So one of your pieces of advice was about failure.
Yeah.
And you said, in surviving failure, you can tolerate the prospect of failure. And tolerating the prospect of failure, you become bold enough to become appropriately ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're wonderfully ambitious. I wonder how much that advice, the idea of like, I need to be bold in my failure, how much that you feel propelled you to do the things you do now.
I hate failure. I think it sucks. I have not been moved by the kind of like recent cultural branding of failure as like spiritually tempering. Like, I just think it hurts and sucks a lot of the time. That said, I just don't know how to win big without it. It's just a necessary part of expanding your skill set and trying to have a big, full, amazing life. So I don't like it. I mean, and I'm not good at it. And I admit that I have, like, you know, some notes to myself around my apartment. It's like, you said this on stage, you better do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You better make yourself available to failure, because I'll see the biggest hypocrite.
Right.
But I have to. It takes reminding. It takes reminding. Nobody likes to fail, and failing publicly is the worst.
Yeah. It takes doing something scary. Doing something outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Can I ask what feels like the most recent real failure that you've endured?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I had a pretty big whiff, like, and I don't mean whiff like smile. I mean, like, when you miss a ball. Is that called whiff?
Yeah.
I missed a pitch romantically that sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a lot of swings. And then professionally, like, I'm recently, like, really struggling to find a good balance between, like, we talked about live performance. I get so into it that sometimes I don't manage the vocal performance. So it feels really awesome when you see it in the room, but the recording isn't as good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where I want to land on that spectrum. So I've had conversations with a lot of other singers, because I can sing beautifully if I hold still.
Uh-huh.
And I can emote if I move. And so
what,
where
recording
on that spectrum
are you talking about? Like, if someone is taking a video and putting it on YouTube?
So a lot of shows, like, so right now, like, a lot of shows will say, hey, do you mind if we live stream this? And I've been failing, I mean, in a small way, to say, like, that would be a great look for me. My answer is no, because I think if people just watch it small on their phone and they only get that glitchy audio feed and they can't feel the feeling, that maybe it's not my best presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that the people in the room were moved. I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do I haven't cracked that nut yet. And there's been some times when I've gone too far either way. We're like, wow, this sounded beautiful, but it was like a bee in the room.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes it was like, you know, at the end of the thing, we're all sweating and hugging and crying. I know that was a win.
Yeah.
And boy, does that recording sound humble. Yeah.
It's interesting. I wonder if the need or the desire to have a real connection with the audience, this might be crazy, but is more palpable and necessary in, like, a more kind of hip hop environment almost. Just because it's more naked or something. I don't know. Mm. I just know that my fiance is a hip hop artist too. And the
vocalist,
rapper.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so the crowd reaction. And this is true for any artist, of course, but the crowd reaction is so important, and you're not able to change that. He's, you know, it's kind of at the mercy of it, but something about the way you're describing it just makes me wonder about.
Well, but Dara, you're in a band, so do you feel like it's different for him than it was for you?
I do, because
compare.
When we're in a band, being in a group, there's really no way to collectively
adjust.
Yeah, I mean, we go on stage and you have to say to each other and ourselves, just like, this is going to be the best show if it's for 10 people who don't care and are talking the whole time. It's the same show. It's got to be the same show. That doesn't actually end up happening. Uh-huh. We try. But
is there banter
no
in your show? Like, does someone ever talk between songs?
Yeah, the lead singer would talk. Okay.
Not really amongst yourselves, though.
Not amongst ourselves. And it wasn't as free. It wouldn't sort of shift necessarily if like the vibe was different.
Would your set list stay this fixed?
Pretty
okay,
fixed.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You know, it's just that's such a tricky thing to be so tied to the crowd.
I mean, I wonder, so I'm going to flip it. I'm going to say, what if it's the case that all of us really care hypothetically about the crowd reaction? It's just that in hip hop, there's such a clear litmus test for success. So if I do a really good, like, I have a cover of a Springsteen song in one of my records, right? But
which song?
Going Down. Okay. It's such a good song. But when you play that, when we played that song really well, you know, people are like, oh, that's a good song. I like that yeah. song. Yeah, good job. You know what I mean? When you play a rap banger, there is no there's no parsing of the response. You know if you won or right. not because that is... you're someone's bleeding, you know.
Yeah.
Bleeding. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, tell us about this banger of an album. Do you feel good about your vocals on this?
Segway.
Hey, Segway Street. You like that?
I do. I know there's no other way for me to say it, right? And who's going to say no, not really. But man, right. It's okay. No, I recorded this one with a new producer who pushed me a lot harder. And I didn't like that feeling at first because I was like, shut up, I know my voice. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I'm a grown uh-huh. woman. I recorded a bunch of stuff.
And what was the direction? What was the pushing?
Yeah. So like even it was the same guy. His name is Andy Thompson. And he was the same producer and engineer who did the mixtape, you know?
Okay.
And Broadway guys and girls have Broadway people have have like really huge ranges.
Right. Yeah.
Rappers usually stick to about three notes.
Yeah.
And there was one note that was just hella high. And I kept missing it. I was very embarrassed. I mean, missing a high note.
It was your writing, though.
That's a whiff that hurts.
It wasn't my writing. It was for the mixtape. Oh, you know what I mean? So it was a whiff.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound rad. And I prefer to do that, if I can, by myself.
Right.
And he was like, you got it. Just keep going. Just keep pushing. Try it a few more times. And you know, he was just so like patient and it felt like very process. And then once I found a way to do it, I was like, oh, I can hit this note and it sounds better in my voice if I add a little trill at the end. This sounds rad. Okay. I'm into this. Yeah. And then when we recorded the record together, it was like, just realizing that very often you record the songs when they're freshest. You haven't had any opportunity to really learn the things like, I should breathe here, particularly for rap verses, like when to inhale, when to kind of, you know, slide a beat, you know, mm-hmm. relax on a rhythm or something.
Mm-hmm.
And something about, and I know I'm like, I'm superstitious. Now I'm just like, well, has Andy heard it? I don't want to put it out if Andy hasn't, like he's an amulet. But yeah, I think my vocal recordings on this one are the strongest. And I was exciting also just learned like you can be a grown up and get way better at a thing that you've done a lot. That was also just like, I want to reappraise the rest of me. Maybe I can learn to like make my bed. And I did. I'm like way neater.
It applies to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you produced on this record too.
I did.
Very exciting.
I did. Yeah. Insufferably delighted. I don't know. It's like,
why am I such a nerd? No, not such a nerd, but why? Are you so surprised by the ability that you like
to produce?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I wonder if I'm getting into some really regressive thinking in my own head here. There are few women rappers. There are fewer women hip hop producers, if I had to guess, although I certainly don't have census data on that. It felt terribly exciting to like buy my own beat machine. And then probably unlike most rap producers to read the manuals like over a course of several afternoons.
That's great.
And my first beat was made from from a tutorial. From like one of the exercises and it was like, here's how you use bass. And I was like, well, all right, I do like that sound. Okay. You know, like, it's 100% like sitting at my kitchen table and drinking coffee and like making a rap banger while following the instructions in like a very imperfectly written guide.
That's awesome.
And then I was so nervous to play it for the guys because like Doomtree, one of Doomtree's big strengths is they make like killer production and it's weird too. So it's not like, hey, we're just very pristine. We really know the formula. They come out with this really left field stuff all the time. It's one of their big strengths. They make rap music that just veers in unusual directions. And so to get like the, I was playing the record on my stupid little like a Bluetooth speaker for one of the producers in Doomtree. And he was like, hey, what's up? Who made this one? It was like the Grinch scene. Yeah. Like my heart grew three sizes too big. I was like, I made this with Paper Tiger.
Little baby's flying away.
Yeah. And I think Laserbeak, one of the other executive producers on the record, could see like how, I don't know. It's like the kid who makes like the macaroni card for her mom. Like I did it. And so
I get it. Yeah.
Totally.
So you didn't have them produce on this one?
Oh, sorry. So I had a bunch of, to be clear, I only produced like a song and a half. So let's just limit the,
But you had the Broadway producer as well?
Yeah. So on this record, I had Laserbeak made a bunch of beats.
Okay.
And Paper Tiger made some beats. Cecil Otter. And all those people are in the
industry. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And then executive production, which is sort of like after you've got some of the basic sounds and now you're shaping it, was the Hamilton guy.
Got it.
The guy who helped me with Hamilton, Andy Thompson. And then two of the beats, as we were finishing the record, I knew I wanted some that were more like mid-tempo. Like I had some mean tracks and I had some pretty tracks. And I wasn't really sure in the sequencing how I was going to bridge those.
Yeah.
So I put a call on Twitter that was like, hey, do you make beats? Do you make mid-tempo beats that are sample free? Because I don't have a legal department.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then found a couple that way.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So as a hyphenate person like you are, will putting an album out feel like any kind of exhale? Or is that just all of a sudden more time that needs to go to all the other things?
Oh, I see. Do you mean like, does this mark sort of like, okay, some work is done. You can breathe for a second?
Yeah.
Yesterday, I announced my first hardcover book.
Ooh, with, right.
Yeah, with Congrats. Dutton. With, it was just a Penguin Random House.
A
imprint,
poetry so. Book?
It's a hardcover collection of personal essays.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Which are written already.
Okay.
Just finished copying
That's
it.
That's so Amazing. Exciting.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Look at how much we sound more like a morning public
I know.
That's exciting. So
when you talk about books.
Congratulations.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
thank you.
Right.
So when does that come out? Do you know?
I do. That comes out in September. It's called My Own Devices.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then in between the album and the book, you'll be touring.
Yeah.
Right?
So we're doing the US and Europe and awesome. Some Asian dates too.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then what comes after the book?
I can't say it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Meaning there's something.
There's something.
Ooh.
There's something. Yeah.
Okay.
So much to look forward to.
Yeah. Keep us posted.
I will.
Please.
Thanks.
All right, Dessa, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Your questions. I'm out here arms wide, hiding nothing. I've done it all in broad daylight, and I left the cameras running.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien Podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.